Great, Bart. Thank you very much for inviting us to be part of this particular meeting. I have no financial disclosures. I am getting over a cold, and I appreciate your indulgence as I get through my presentation. Bart, how do I advance?
Just use the mouse for you. Right here. Just
I hit this once. There we go. I will go over a number of things today. I have a lot of information that I made available, hopefully, on the web. It's meant to be a standalone document so that you folks have a chance to look at it once you get home, back to work, whatever. And I have a lot of reference material here. I'll fly through many of the slides. There is contact information for me. I direct one small part of the National Institutes of Health. The information that I'll talk about really relates to NIOSH in terms of mechanisms and probably the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality. Should you have any questions, I'm happy to try to help you or direct you to somebody else. I will do what amounts to an NIH 101. We'll talk about grantsmanship, some funding mechanisms, and I'll close briefly talking about a way that we have recently developed to change how we support or help people do clinical trials. In terms of research priorities, I hope that you're not going to be disappointed by me not standing up here for 5 minutes telling you what I think are the most important things that should be studied. The role for NIH, as you'll see momentarily, really is to let investigators tell us in their grant applications what they really think the most important research needs and priorities are. Bill Meeker in his presentation did a wonderful job, I think, really expressing the scope, the significance of back pain as a major public health problem. And I can hopefully make it clear to the group that to the NIH, this is a major public health problem. It's an area of science that are supported by multiple institutes and centers, and it covers the gamut from basic translational through clinical research. I put this last statement here, and hopefully I'm not going to have things thrown at me. It's also an area of interest that NIOSH and other federal partners have. And if the research directly relates to the workplace, then it may be more NIOSH than us. And that's something that NIOSH and the NIH have a good feel for. And I always tell investigators, submit grant applications, speak with us, but let the two of us decide where the application goes. Don't worry yourself. We are a big place, and I apologize for the complicated slide. We're comprised of 27 institutes and centers. We're based in here in Bethesda, Maryland, also in North Carolina. Our budget last year overall was around $31 billion. My institute, NIAMS, had a $585 million budget. Large, we're still one of the smaller institutes. As I've got highlighted in red, our major mission is to support research, train investigators, and to disseminate that information widely to all interested parties. In terms of the types of applications that we receive, I would say 90% of them are untargeted or investigator-initiated, i.e. it's your good ideas wrapped together in a grant application to us. 10% tend to be targeted, and we have a number of vehicles that we can direct you to submit applications in response to. And they're in the form of the PA, the program announcement, RFA, request for applications, and an RFP, or request for contracts. A PA, a program announcement, is a statement of our interest in the scientific research area. There's no pot of money. Applications compete against all other grant applications that come in that particular council round. For an RFA, it's our interest in a particular area, but we have a pot of money aside. With tight budgets the last number of years, RFAs have become less common at the NIH. My advice to anybody, when any federal partner has a funding opportunity with money, if you have a grant application, submit one. The one thing you can't do using federal funds is to duplicate scientific research. So if you're doing similar research elsewhere is make sure that this new application is distinct or different from what's currently being funded. Contracts are a somewhat different kettle of fish in that they are scientifically directed, but there are deliverables that one has to meet, and these can oftentimes be a much larger mechanism in terms of cost and budget. Most of the applications that we receive are hypothesis-driven. I strongly encourage if you can compose your application to do it that way. We found that for biotechnology engineering applications, that those oftentimes have to be design or technology driven. It's difficult sometimes to put those into a hypothesis format. Again, a complicated slide, but for most of our applications, we have three receipt dates, February, June, and October. These are usually followed 3 to 4 months later with a peer review session where we bring in outside scientists who review the grant applications and basically score them based upon their scientific merit. 3 months later, our advisory council meet, which is a second level of review, and hopefully within 10 to 12 months from submission, your grant application is awarded. I'd love to say that our success rate has changed. I think over the years, as our budget has gotten tighter, for R01s, which are kind of our flagship mechanism, our success rate used to be 20%, it's probably 16 to 17%. So roughly less than one in five applications gets funded these days. The other difficulty is we only accept two iterations of your application, the original application, one revised application. If neither of those gets funded, to come back you have to, and I'm using government quotes here, substantively change the grant application. This too has become a much more difficult matter to deal with. Our Center for Scientific Review uses complicated software ultimately, and you want to be very, very careful that if you come back in that it truly is a new grant application. That's something that you can discuss with me and or other program people who manage research portfolios. I have 16 colleagues in NIAMS, each in different scientific areas. My portfolio is 145 funded projects, roughly $45 million in research. And as Bart said, it's in areas related to orthopedic surgery and musculoskeletal bioengineering. Probably 7 years ago, the NIH did a study, and we were unpleasantly surprised to see that the age at which people got their first R01 increased from the low to mid-30s to the early 40s. And like any enterprise, our lifeblood is dependent upon new people coming into the system, getting training mechanisms, and ultimately having R01s. To help increase the pool of new investigators, literally to help create a greater lifeline, we developed a policy trying to identify and assist young investigators. And we came up with new investigators and early stage investigators. You can be both a new investigator and an early stage investigator, but you don't necessarily have to be both, and let me explain that. A new investigator is anybody who has not had large mechanism support from us or the VA or the National Science Foundation. You can be a new investigator and also an early stage investigator if you happen to be within 10 years of the last day of your training. For purposes of what I'm talking about, it's the new investigator, somebody who hasn't had large mechanism support. Over the last 5 years now, all of the institutes have had enhanced pay lines where we've added 3 to 4 to 5 additional percentile points to our pay line. Last year, my institute funded R01s through pay line through percentiles of 11. If you were a new investigator, it was through 15%. So it's quite a boost. And the other advantage is that your application is reviewed amongst other new investigators. And we're currently trying to analyze the success of this program, but my sense is that there's been a marked increase And I think if our data shows that that in fact is the case, we may well decide to taper off or end this enhanced support. I don't know where a lot of you folks are in terms of your research careers, but when people call me, I go through a number of questions, looking at where they are, what their training is, what their needs are. Do you need further training? Do you need pilot data? Do you have all of that, and are you looking for support for a larger research idea? These are things that we can discuss electronically by phone. You don't have to call me, but I certainly am happy to chat with people. I don't know how many people here are more junior looking for training opportunities. I think I'm going to go quickly through these. We do have training mechanisms to help support people who may be finishing training, graduate school, who want between 1 and 5 years of a mentored research experience. These F32s are an individual postdoctoral fellowship, most commonly picked by people who are medical residents who are finishing their training programs, who want 1 to 2 years of additional training. They require 100% level of effort, which to us is 40 hours a week. That can be a problem for some academic institutions because they look at it as a percent of your total time commitment. So be very careful that you chat with your departmental chair, your dean, and probably Office of Sponsored Research to make sure that they want you to do this. These don't pay a lot of money. It's a $21,000 salary, $4,000 for tuition and so forth. But literally, you pair yourself with a mentor who has outside research support. The KO1, the Mentored, I forgot a capital here, sorry, Research Scientist Development Award, is very similar to the KO8 and the K23, where if you're a PhD scientist, whether basic and or clinical, or a physician, we have mechanisms that can provide 3 to 5 years of research training support, paying between $50,000 and $75,000 a year to do the research, or salary, $20,000 of research support. Again, you're going to need to pair yourself with a mentor who has ongoing research. But all of these mechanisms can help train you to do basic and clinical research. The other novel thing about these is the success rate for the training awards tends to is roughly between 30 and 40% at the NIH. So I think for the right individual who needs this experience, it can be a great opportunity. The last training mechanism that I'll talk about is kind of a hybrid. It's a K99-ROO, our so-called pathway to independence. And it mixes in the first 2 years the standard K-mentored award, where you spend 50 to 75% of your time learning how to do research. If it's successful, and success is determined by me, your program director, you have the ability then to get what amounts to an RO1 of $150,000 a year for 3 years, which you can then potentially use to help garner a job at an academic institute and or elsewhere. The success rate for this is probably 10 to 12%, but I think for the right candidate, and again, I think the people who are successful here tend to be those that truly have a clear picture of where they want to go, it can be a good thing. URLs. To support basic research, we have mechanisms to get pilot data. An RO3 provides 2 to 3 years of funding, $50,000 a year. These are not to do small clinical trials. My institute has their own RO3, and the rest of NIH has one. If you want a little bit more money, there's an R21 which provides 2 years of support, splitting $275,000 over the 2 years. The R21s must be novel, scientifically high risk, and at least for my institute have the potential of being paradigm shifting. And I've got a couple of URLs that give you additional information. probably the Cadillac of all our mechanisms is the NIH Research Project Grant, or R01, requires a high likelihood of success, strong preliminary data. The investigator has to basically have the training and experience to pull this off. Up to 5 years of support, which you need to justify, potentially renewable, and any budget amount, as long as it's justified, again, realizing that if the budget is equal to or greater than $500,000 for one or more years, you'll need prior approval. Contact with someone like me at least 6 weeks before the review date to get our green light to tell the Center for Scientific Review that your application is allowed in. Most of the applications are reviewed based upon significance, you, the investigator, innovation, approach, environment. It's given an overall impact score based upon how the review study section feels your project will impact your scientific field. The only situation where the investigator takes priority are the training awards, where it's your potential to be a future independent researcher has priority. In terms of supporting clinical trials, this started about 2-3 years ago. Last year, we basically came up with the conclusion that we could help people be more successful in clinical trials if we were a little bit more directive. We developed a special R21 to help people get pilot data to support a future clinical trial. We have a clinical trial planning grant, which is 6 to 12 months of funding, now done as a cooperative mechanism, a U, that will allow you to get everything together to do a clinical trial. And then we have two new mechanisms, one based upon a single site clinical study, the other multiple sites that will help support clinical trials. We've also developed a NIAMS only study section that has the expertise to review clinical trials. So for my institute at least, we in-house review all of our clinical trials. We have the necessary clinical expertise, clinical trial expertise, biostatistical expertise, we think, to do a better job for you in terms of review. I have all kinds of messages here in terms of take home. There aren't too many junior people here. The R03, R21 for preliminary data. If you're a new investigator, given our enhanced pay lines, I think the R01, if you have pilot data, should be a go. Paths to success. With some of the issues our government is facing, I was contemplating deleting number 3 there, that I'm from the government and I'm here to help. But I am, and we are here to help, and we wouldn't be here if you folks aren't submitting grant applications. And I think we received over 100,000 of them last year, so we're still anxious to do that. Other checklists, which you can get off of my presentation on the website. Problems. I think to really be successful, you really need to have a vision of where you want to go. You need to kind of pair yourself with talented people to help do all of this. And I think, I'm not mentioned there, but I think the NIH program director is always there to potentially serve as a guidepost through what can be a very complicated, sometimes ominous system. More links. My contact information, as I always say, the most important slide. And my institute just celebrated its 25th birthday back in June 2011. And with that, I'll close and turn things back to Bart. Thank you all very much.